All right, everyone, welcome back. We are very excited. It's Allison and Bertine, and we're here to interview Miss Siobhan Stewart. Siobhan, welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. I guess while we're starting it off, tell us a little bit about yourself. I know, very cliche.
Sounds good. So I'm Siobhan Stewart, as you mentioned. Formerly Siobhan Marinangeli, as some people have known me since before I was married. So I guess just a bit about myself. I guess, now I'm just going to think of like AV industry stuff related to myself. But wow.
Give us some fun facts.
Fun facts. So apparently a fun fact is that I was in French immersion from grades 4 to OAC. I am still a proud boy band fan from the late 90s, early 2000s.
Wait, hold on. Backstreet Boys are
NSYNC.
NSYNC.
Oh, really? Yes.
It started with Backstreet Boys, but then when NSYNC came out, I just liked them a lot better.
Wow. So, yeah. I mean, I don't even feel like I listened to NSYNC as a kid. I think it was only Backstreet Boys. Even know why.
I think it's just because Backstreet Boys had more albums. They're still around and kicking. NSYNC definitely were a lot bigger in the U.S. And then I think Backstreet Boys just had they both started off in Europe, but Backstreet Boys, they were the ones that kicked it all off at that point.
Wow. I actually like NSYNC too. And I think they did more collaborations with other artists compared to the Backstreet Boys.
Definitely. But it's really funny because of the whole thing with NSYNC and boy bands at that point, like I was going to their concerts all the time. I even, when I was 17, took a Greyhound by myself to meet a friend that I met online to go see NSYNC in Boston.
What? So you're adventurous. Okay.
Yes. I'm still kind of like that, but now I actually, you know, am more, you know, money savvy in a way, instead of just being like, oh, I'm just going to spend all my money to go see, you know, whoever I want. So, but because of all that and my experiences with that, I went to college for entertainment administration or music business. And I'm sure I'll touch a bit more on that later if I had to guess. But yeah, and I'm also a huge baseball fan. Have grown up a Jays fan, sports in general, but baseball is probably my biggest one, which everybody thinks is weird because everybody thinks that baseball is boring. I personally don't. But yeah, and I've been to about 12 other ballparks, and I'm going to add more to that list at some point. So,
cool.
So yeah, so that, I guess that's me in a nutshell. I could also talk about my pets, but everybody knows about my pets. So,
you know, what's funny, I feel like baseball, okay, this is just my opinion. I do like baseball. But I always felt like it's like golf for me. It's like a game that I'd rather play than watch. And I was also at that game that had the 19 innings. So that could have like thrown me.
Oh my gosh.
And at the time I was pregnant and I was just like, I need to like get out of here.
I totally remember that game happening because we were up at the cottage and we started watching it and then we listened to it on the way home and then we got to watch it again when we got home and it was about like a 2-hour drive. I definitely prefer to watch it live than on TV, but that's more because of like the atmosphere. I do find that at least at Sky Dome, aka Rogers Center, but it'll always be Sky Dome, there's less of an atmosphere compared to if you go to pretty much anywhere in the U.S.
In the States. Yeah, I agree with that.
It's completely different in terms of like, you know, I've been to Old Yankee Stadium and Fenway Park and Wrigley Field. Those are staple ballparks with like, you know, long-standing teams. Like everybody there knows so much about baseball. They don't hassle you if you're a fan of, you know, the visiting team. They might do some playful ribbing, but that's pretty much it. And it's just, it's a lot different than, it's so hard to explain without negatively talking about Toronto.
No, it's true though. Cause when I used to go to like Leafs games and stuff, and I was in the box, you'd say, just say with the manufacturer or someone that had invited me, like I would be like cheering. And then people would look at me like I was crazy for cheering because it was so quiet. And then I guess that's really not where the true fans are. The true fans are actually in the seats, probably like a little bit higher. And, you know, it's sad because they should be the ones down there. Yeah.
All the suits are down.
You feel bad for clapping. You feel like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't even cheer them on because it's like so quiet.
I was going to say, is it like clapping when the plane lands? Is it like that type of clapping?
No, people just like looked at me like, why are you here clapping? This is supposed to be, it's like we're at the library, like, shh, like, don't make a sound. We're trying to watch this in complete silence. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Just felt like I was interrupting. But anyway, so thank you, Siobhan. That was awesome. Thank you for introducing yourselves. I'm sure everyone already knows you, but it's good for those who don't know much about you. But so what I wanted to ask you is, what led you into our wonderful AV industry? How'd you get here?
As I mentioned, I went to Durham College for Entertainment Administration, aka it's now known as Music Business Management. Jobs are very limited in the music industry or even the film industry. Pretty much after I graduated, I obviously needed to work. So I ended up working at a movie theater, worked there for 4.5 years. Then I ended up working at HMV for a tiny bit, and then I got into data entry. And then I ended up using that data entry experience to get a job at an online deal site. And I was hired from there to sort of do a coupon site for the US. And then from that, there weren't too many visitors from that, so they started a online buying site. And then so I was kind of a data entry coordinator for that. And after a couple of years, because it was owned by a company that was financially struggling, they sold our department to our competition and our whole department was pretty much laid off. After that, went back to data entry and I was just applying for anything that was like a sales coordinator. And from that, I found a job at an AV integrator. Not fully understanding what they did or anything, but the awesome thing was I hit it off with my former colleague who interviewed me, and I got the job and was there for 4.5 years. And now I've been at Global for almost 3 years, and that brings my AV total to 8, almost 8. And it was all by fluke. And it's probably the closest job I could get to what I learned in college. So it's kind of funny how it took a while, but it did come around full circle.
Wow. Doesn't it feel like just yesterday, though? Like, it just feels like time flies.
It does. It like when I realized it was 8 years since I started, I'm like, oh my gosh. And then thinking about my time at Global, even though most of it has been here at home, thanks to the wonders of the pandemic, I can't believe it's been almost 3 years.
That's crazy.
Even though time's like an illusion during the pandemic.
When you first started in the AV industry, because I mean, I guess I started like six and a half years ago. Did you truly have any idea what it meant? Because I'm going to be honest, I didn't.
Nope.
Like no clue. Like when you say it and then even like you Google the company and you kind of like do your research and you're like, okay, like what is AV? And then you have no idea that there's this massive industry behind it that's all over the world, not just in this little space. And then you start thinking about it and uncovering it and how much you're truly like in front of it every day, or how many people really see it every day, use it every day, and where it can be applied. And I mean, I feel like that's just growing and growing and growing, even with the pandemic too, right? It's just becoming more and more important and people are realizing it. It's crazy because you didn't expect to, you know, go into the workforce and say, you know, I want to be in audiovisual, right? Which is boggles my mind sometimes.
And even the word audiovisual, like it doesn't really kind of reflect everything that our industry does. And because if you talk to any of your like family friends or your friends or your extended family, and they talk about their workplaces and they go, yeah, I was in a boardroom. Like, you know, for them, it's like, I was just using VC for a meeting. And they're like, oh, well, that's what I do. Like, oh, that's what you do? Oh, wait a minute. Wait, I thought you guys install TVs. No. That's not it.
Like, we install TVs, but it was easy because
you know, I just used this little touch thing on the table and it kind of like turned off the lights and it like brought up down this, and I was like, that's what we do. It's like, that's like probably a Crestron or Extron touch panel. Wait, okay, so you guys do that? It's like, yes. It's like, it's really hard to explain to people what we do, especially like family or friends, because it's like it's a weird way of explaining, and everyone uses it. at their workplaces, but it's hard to explain exactly what we do because it's like it's such a unique and specialized industry, but everyone uses it, and there's someone like us that's actually integrating it, so it's like interesting.
Totally. And I was exactly like that, and I still vividly remember when my first day in AV, once I showed up for my first day, there was a sales meeting, and then they said, oh, come into the sales meeting, and that way you can, you know, meet the sales team and then learn all, like, I guess just learn about a little bit about what we do here. And I was like, they were just talking about like their opportunities and their forecasts and projects, and I'm just, my eyes are glazing over because I'm just like, what did I get into? I don't know, understand a word of it. They're using like words like codec and, you know, smart boards and a bunch of terms I've never heard before in my life. And I'm just like, okay, I'm going to have to, you know, really kind of hunker down and try to make some sense out of what they're talking about. It ended up being, you know, it was definitely a lot easier to I was very motivated to learn everything, or at least as much as I could from a non-technical standpoint. And at least within like the first couple of years, I finally knew what a codec was and, you know, understood some aspects of, you know, switching and bridging and scaling and all that. But it's just funny because even since then, everything has changed so much because we're not really relying on hard codecs anymore. Everything is turning into soft codecs. And that's just within 4 years.
Yeah.
So it's nuts just how fast everything happens and how you have to keep on top of everything so you're not way far behind.
So speaking of, like, you know, how hard it was for you to understand exactly what we did when you first started, like, what do you think are like some resources that would help someone, you know, along the way?
Sure. There are a lot of resources. Actually, the first thing that the first resource I used was my colleagues who have been in the industry for longer than me, specifically the installers and the designers, because they have the technical knowledge. So they would show me, like, you know, look at this drawing. This is kind of how these things work. These are how these things connect. And sometimes it was, you know, this is what the functionality is of this product. This is why we put it in, and start my gaining of knowledge with that. Yeah. After that, there's, you know, obviously manufacturer meetings, webinars, and obviously Avixa has, you know, resources on their site. Mm-hmm. I know that there's an AV technologist certification, which is sort of like a precursor to the CTS. So there's lots of resources on there. There's portals and like online universities for manufacturers. So all of the resources are out there. And one thing I have noticed is everybody wants to help you learn.
No, exactly. And I feel like there's so much, it's hard to keep up with it because it's like, you know, because we're in technology, things are changing all the time. So we really have to stay on top of it. And I think just like adding to that, engaging with your vendors and participate in any trade shows or anything that you can. Maybe now it's virtual, but things like that would probably help as well. Like, that's what I found.
Yeah, definitely. And trying to think. And oh, yeah, not just colleagues, but leadership. Because, you know, you have to have, like, you know, the leadership to, like, you can discuss, you know, where you want to go in your career, how you can get there. So it's just kind of just getting advice from everything from everybody.
I think you hit pretty much everything. Like, that's pretty good. Like, I would say the same as well. So just don't be afraid to ask for help and be a sponge, absorb everything. And then slowly wring it out, like, what you don't need.
Going into the AV industry, obviously it is very, very unique. And thankfully, a lot of us have fallen into it. But, you know, thinking back on that and what you were doing with, you know, earlier in your career and your younger self, if you could give any advice, what would you say to yourself if you could give a ring to the past?
So pretty much the main thing is to be patient and not compare your life to others. Everybody has their own path to follow, even though they might not know where that path is going to lead. You can make a plan, but not everything goes to plan. Nothing is ever linear. It's always peaks and valleys. In my personal case, I waited a year to decide what I was going to take in college. Couldn't find a job outside of college that was related. Now it's been almost 20 years since I graduated college. Oh my God. But but I didn't decide, I didn't have a career industry decided or at least cemented until about 10 years after graduating college. So 10 years ago, I didn't get married until my late 30s. So everything happens when it's meant to happen. But most importantly, it's not a reflection on who you are as a person, or it's not like, you know, judging your effort, because you could work your butt off and you still don't reap any rewards. So so be patient and don't compare your life to others.
I think that's one of the biggest things is not comparing yourself to others. I mean, because you always see maybe like certain individuals, say that you went to high school with or something, or, you know, who are just like common friends. And then it's always in the back of your head, like, oh, if they bought $1 million house, like, why am I not there at that level? Right. Certain things happen and, you know, it just happens. And then all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're like, wow, 3 years ago, I never expected that this would be a thing. And it is. Yeah. Right.
They always say, don't try to peak too early in your career, because they say you have to work towards something, and anything that's worth having, it takes time, right? So like you should never worry about how long it takes you, and there's not like an end goal. Like, I don't know, like people always say, oh, I have to be this or I have to have this in order to be successful. I feel like as long as you're happy, and I know it sounds corny, but at the end of the day, as long as you're happy and that you're enjoying life, I think that's the most important thing. And if you love what you do and you enjoy it, I think that's just a bonus. So it's like,
definitely. And I mean, the amount of people I know that went to school, like they went to university, gosh, I think I could name like at least 3 people who went to university because they want to become lawyers. They pretty much, they finished their courses at university, and pretty much after that, whether they had like an internship or a co-op, or just decided, you know what, this isn't for me, I'm not going to law school, and then they have to just completely reset. And, you know, and I think that a lot of us have had that sort of experience where you're just hopping, sort of test the waters, and then all of a sudden something sticks. So, you know, I think that for the most part, that happens to quite a few people. It's very, very difficult nowadays, I find, to, you know, especially, you know, again, getting a job in what you learn.
So if there was like one common myth about our profession or field that you wanted to debunk, what would that be? I know there's lots. But
this one was actually probably the hardest. Oh. So I don't think I can really speak to the AV industry specifically, but in terms of sales support, I think the common myth is we're like the help, and then we're the ones that just kind of do what, you know, the account managers and the rest of the sales team don't really want to do. They're just like, eh, I don't want to do this, so here, you do it. Or they just pass along, you know, scraps. So, you know, it's not about staying in the office and or remote office. And sales support is an integral part of the sales team. You know, to use our good old friend Jeff Chick, and I use this in my introductions now all the time because of him.
How did he get in this podcast?
Jeff pops up everywhere, pretty much. But he refers to me as the glue that binds the sales team together, which I don't know whether I would say I'm the glue, but that's essentially what sales support is, keeping everybody on track. And we're almost as equally involved as account managers, or at least we should be, such as, like, you know, attending client visits, going to trade shows, meeting vendors and manufacturers. Pretty much the way I view it is clients and vendors should know who is supporting the account managers. I mean, it sounds kind of lame, but there's strength in numbers. Instead of having to deal with one person or work with one person, the client has an option where, you know, they might not feel comfortable telling the account manager something, but they might feel comfortable telling, you know, professional services or sales support or somebody else on the team. So the more that the clients or vendors know, like people on the team, I think that that's probably the strongest. But a lot of times I think some sales support people have found that we're sort of the afterthought.
You know what? Have to say, as I was in the same position before, you know, I love that position because I felt like I was able to absorb so much information. Like literally the role that I learned the most in. And I feel like you become such good friends with vendors and clients that, you know, sometimes you become the first call sometimes before the account managers. It's kind of funny sometimes, but you know, I would get the account, like I would get all the clients calling me before they would call the account managers, because you end up having more of a relationship with clients sometimes or vendors. And I think that's really important, because behind all of the sales team, there is someone that's holding it down and holding it strong. And it's usually the sales support representative. So yeah, speaking from being there, like, I know how important that role is too. So,
and I know it's going to sound kind of weird, but I also find that I feel like a mama bear to the account reps,
yes.
Like in a good way. Like I truly, like, you know, care very much about their success and their work with clients and all that. And, you know, want to motivate them as much as I can, help them out as much as I can. And I kind of feel very protective of them too.
Yeah. Next thing you know, they're off. Weird. Next thing you know, they're off to college and they don't need us anymore.
Oh my
God. Yeah, I think it's just because I have been in sales support for so long that I've seen what works and I've seen what doesn't work. And definitely one myth is that we're just sort of in, that we're supposed to just be in the background as opposed to being client facing. So
a lot of great points you brought up. And now, with sticking on, you know, your profession, your role, I think a key thing that I feel like everyone always tries to do within whatever profession they're in is trying to learn new things, you know, stay on top of new trends. Maybe trends is the wrong word, but continue to grow and really stay on top of everything. So how would you say that you can continue to learn in order to stay on top of things within your role?
I guess pretty much, as I mentioned, talking to leadership, talking to colleagues, talking to vendors, attending trade shows, taking courses. There's so many resources available, whether it be online or people. So pretty much leveraging all that to build that knowledge, even though it's essentially like being a sponge. So just trying to absorb as much as you can.
Exactly. I agree with that.
So, you know, and part of that is working, you know, making sure that you work with or that you're on a team that's a good fit.
Very
true. To say the least.
Yes, so. Very true. So let's get into the juicy details. Like, tell us something that's a crazy but true fact about you, or something super juicy that no one knows about you.
Somebody in my family was doing some, I don't know whether it was ancestry.ca or some other kind of family tree thing.
Who are you related to? Oh my gosh.
It's actually nobody big, but
oh, it's Hugh Grant. It's Hugh Grant.
No. Okay, sorry. Go.
Oh no. So my great grandmother's great grandfather, I think. No, her grandfather.
Is the king, the prince.
No. His name was Jesse Lloyd, and he was an American who was a rebel against the British and came up to Canada and kind of started his own rebel unit, I think. He lived up in Simcoe, just outside of Schaumburg. There's a little hamlet named after him called Lloydtown. So there's even like Allison's a plaque checking. And a statue. And yeah, like, and now that I've gone on to Ancestry, I was taking a look and like they have records of wanted posters because he was a fugitive because the British wanted to, you know, get him. So he ended up having to flee back to back to the U.S. And I think he passed away in Indiana.
Oh my gosh, this is too juicy.
It's between Orangeville and Newmarket.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You're like famous. And like we should call you the Rebel from now on.
Oh.
So you own Lloydtown now, basically. That's what I'm hearing.
No, it would be nice if I owned a town much like the Roses in Schitt's Creek, but that's not the case. So yeah, it was very interesting finding that out because I'm just like, oh, we actually, you know, we have, you know, some pretty, you know, we have at least one important person in the families.
Oh my gosh, this is so exciting. So, the Rebel.
Yeah, the Rebel. That would explain my rebellious streak.
I can't even wrap my head around it right now. Oh my goodness. Wow. I mean, I honestly thought it would have been something weird, like I have 11 toes or something, but not like.
That's what I was hoping for in a weird way.
I have a very, you know, boring or very uneventful life, I guess you could say.
So. I mean, I wouldn't consider having 11 toes very eventful at all.
Do they charge more for a pedicure if that happened? No, I'm joking. This is getting out of hand. But what if they had, like, do they have to have a different spacer? You know, the thing they put between your toes for pedicures? Like, would they have to, like, attach? No, I don't know. This is getting on.
No, they, you know what? They might have to. You know what? They probably do. See the things that come up, and now it's going to be one of those thoughts that's going to haunt my
except
mind.
Except you don't have 11 toes.
I know, and I don't have 11 toes. Yeah, that's probably the most, the quote unquote craziest thing, other than traveling to Boston on a Greyhound when I was 17 to go meet an online friend.
What'd you learn today? Well, Siobhan has 11 toes and she owns Lloydtown. That's what I found out today. It's like, wait a minute. No one will ever know.
It'll be interesting to go up and check it out.
All right, so our industry, you gotta love it. It's a lot of fun. We do a lot of unique things. You're always learning things. But what makes you love this industry?
Definitely, it's constantly changing. It keeps you on your toes. Probably the stuff I first learned when I started, not maybe 50% might still be relevant, or maybe 75%. 50 is a little low. There's always opportunities to learn and grow, so it's not boring. Every day is something new. And and then having to bring up the pandemic again, you know, all of a sudden our industry was sort of very muchly needed, to say the least. Yeah. Because all of a sudden, you know, at least from a corporate standpoint, all of a sudden people need to learn remotely, or not learn, or work remotely. And education is learning.
And learning.
And sort of all of a sudden, you know, all these companies were forced to look at this stuff. And so I know that it's been a little bit crazy on the AV industry's end, at least from that standpoint, not the event standpoint, but it's fun. And I like all the people.
That's always a bonus if you like the people. So I know I talked about this earlier, but like, if you were to do a sales pitch or tell your family what you do for a living, how would you describe that to your family?
I think pretty much the way it kind of starts, I was going to joke about how it's kind of like those things that you see online where it's like, explain the plot of a movie poorly.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
It's something that makes sense but doesn't really, because it's I couldn't come up with anything in terms of trying to review it badly. But essentially, you know, I pretty much tell them I essentially end up having to kind of relate it to what they do. You know, if they work in an office, I say, oh, do you have meeting rooms that have like a projector or a display and, you know, inputs in the table and all that? That's what we do. Do you use Zoom or WebEx or Microsoft Teams? If you use those, that's something else that we do. And it all ties together. It's not just, you know, oh, there's a TV, put it up. It's a lot more complicated than that. And they get to, and the funny thing is, some people, family and friends, get to see me freak out when we go to a restaurant and their AV is crap, or like the sound quality is horrible, or even worse, video walls. It actually will ruin my meal because it will distract me so much. But yeah, it is quite hard to explain. Pretty much trying to relate it to something that they would know definitely makes it a lot easier. So,
well, when I try to, my immediate family knows, but if I explain to anyone else, they're like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. But hey, do you think you can get me a deal on a 65-inch Samsung frame TV? And I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. So you didn't hear what I said then?
Yeah.
If that's all you're asking, you weren't listening.
Exactly.
So a completely off topic question. If you could be part of any TV show, what would it be?
So I am really, really, really obsessed with Ted Lasso. I'm telling all the listeners and you too, if you haven't watched Ted Lasso yet, you have to. It is completely unexpected in terms of, you know, it's heartwarming. It makes you cry. It makes you like crack up. Like, I've cackled before. And it's just so well written. The cast is perfect. You know, it's weird because, like, you think that they're going to start focusing on, oh, here's the old disgruntled soccer player who's near the end of his career. So you think that's going to follow a stereotype with him, you know, I guess being negative or crabby or whatever. There's, you know, the young cocky guy, and you think that's going to follow the same path. And it's not. They show every single character with their own flaws and their strengths. There's women empowering women. There's no toxic masculinity in it. Or I don't even think it happened, but I think if there was a time when it happened, it was somebody put the kibosh on it, like right away saying, no, it's just a huge breath of fresh air. And I actually find it's kind of helped me become a better person because it's some of the lessons it teaches, and it teaches like really good leadership skills. I saved some quotes just to kind of get your way or sort of get wet your whistle in terms of what it's kind of like. But there's like, I think that you might be so sure that you're one in a million that sometimes you forget that out there you're just one in 11. So that's a good, like, you know, kind of like a team building thing. You know, somebody acknowledging, I lost my way for a minute, but I'm on the road back. That's somebody acknowledging that they made a mistake and, you know, they're kind of trying to get better at it. I shouldn't bring an umbrella to a brainstorm.
use that one.
Yeah. I've done that a couple times.
But probably my favorite one, and I think that this definitely helps with, you know, diversity and inclusion, is quote, I can't remember who the quote is attributed to, because somebody said it and then Ted Lasso said it in the show, but it's be curious, not judgmental.
Ooh, that's a good one. I like that one.
So you learn, so at least in terms of people or process or what have you, make the effort to learn about it, make an effort to understand it instead of just being like poo-pooing it right off the bat.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite one that you mentioned, because I think it's so easy to muddle the line between judgmental and like curiosity, because people think sometimes asking questions can be judgmental, but somebody could be just curious and or vice versa. So I think that's interesting. I like it. I got to watch it now. Like, you've mentioned it a few times now, but I need to watch it. I have to add it to the list.
Yeah, I still like my show better, but you know.
Well, don't then? Mention that.
That show?
She said if she could be in a reality show, it would be...
Not reality show, a show.
Oh, show, sorry. And people that are listening, do not judge Allison because of this. She would be in Dexter. Just think about that.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like that would be like one of five.
There are so many... that's the thing. There are so many TV shows, and like for so many different reasons, like, you know, you'd want to be a part of it. So, yeah.
I would just like something that either makes me laugh as hard as when I do when I'm in the office, or that's something that's like really dramatic and intense.
Superstore. That's a good one. Yeah,
I feel like Superstore or The Office would be really fun.
Superstore definitely reminds me of working, you know, in retail and in the movie theater, because it's pretty much exactly how it is.
Do a poll, like, of all the people that are listening to this. Have you watched The Office? Have you watched Superstore? And which one do you like better?
Only watched episodes of The Office here and there.
Allison shaking your head in disapproval.
I know. I don't know why. It's just one of those things where I just couldn't get into it.
Skip the first season. That is the best advice my little sister gave me.
I think it's like that with a lot of TV shows where sometimes it's just like the first two episodes, they're kind of like, oh my gosh, no, I'm going to give this one more try. And then it's sort of like that's where they found their ground. Well, so
the last time we went to Infocom, like, we were all sitting relatively close to each other. And I think
very close, you
very
know,
close to each other, which Allison doesn't like. But anyways, I think the majority of people were watching The Office like on their iPads, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
And then Bertine watches The Nun or The Nun.
Yeah, I watched. I watched like the first 30 seconds of The Nun, the horror film, and then I just completely shut it down before the credits started opening, because I was like, this is too scary for me. Just to wrap things up, like, so Siobhan, how can people connect with you online? Is there a preferred way that you like? Do not want people to contact? I'm just kidding.
Of course I want people to contact me. So I am on LinkedIn. You can just search Siobhan Stewart. My title is Sales Support Representative at Global Unified Solution Services. Only problem with assuming my husband's last name is that there are a lot more Siobhan Stewarts than Siobhan Marinangelis. So you might have to take a little bit of a look. But I think my URL, I made it Siobhan Stewart AV or something along those lines. I'm happy to talk to anybody who wants to connect.
I think you should change your name to Rebel Stewart, because that way you won't get confused with anybody else.
But then like, I'll just feel like Rebel Wilson.
Yes.
Yeah, see? I'm going to call you Rebel from now on.
Or you can just be Siobhan Lloyd Town Stewart. I think that's better. I mean,
Siobhan Lloyd Town. That sounds so Downton Abbey.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Siobhan, for joining us and having a little chat with us.
It's definitely weird talking about myself because I'm not used to it.
But you should do it more often.
Maybe I will. Maybe I will. You never
know. Stay tuned.
I can guarantee that a lot of people who probably already know you don't know a lot of things that we talked about in this podcast. So,
but now I'm an open book.
Yes.
Because you're curious, not
judgmental.
Judgmental.
Judgmental. Line of the day. Maybe that'll be the title. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks, Siobhan.
Thank you.